Hey everybody, this is Alex Merced, and you're listening to another episode of Data Nation, where I like to talk about, well, data. Okay, and basically, if you haven't actually went to go check out the datalakehousehub.com or datalakehousehub.com to go join the community and things like that, please go do that so that way, if you want to message me on Slack or whatever, you can and learn about cool events. But bottom line is this. The big sort of news today was that they announced something called Duck Lake, and I'm going to talk about other really cool data stuff afterwards. But what is Duck Lake? So Duck Lake is sort of a new entrant into the idea of sort of a data lakehouse format, kind of like Apache Iceberg, Apache Hudi, Delta Lake, Apache Pymon. Duck Lake takes on a different approach. So when you think about the traditional formats that we've seen so far that I previously mentioned, the concept is to sort of pull you away from the scaling constraints of a database, because again, when you have a database or a data warehouse, you run into sort of scaling challenges. Whether you have limitations with like horizontal or vertical scaling, depending on sort of what your systems you're using, and then the cost that comes with a sort of all this persistent compute, because these systems are all integrated storage, compute, and catalog, and so forth. And metadata. So you have these like sort of consistently running compute systems that then require you to run instances running that software, which costs money. Okay, so they get pretty expensive pretty quickly. While they do here with like an Iceberg or a Delta or a Hudi or a Pymon, everything sort of exists within files. So all the metadata about the table is in a file, and the data of the table are in Parquet files. And they would just sit on your Hadoop storage, on your S3 storage, on your ADLS storage, wherever. The benefit of this is that your table can exist and nothing is running. Okay, you don't have to have any kind of database system, data warehouse system running. That table is there, and you're not running up any additional costs other than the cost of storage. That's sort of benefit number one. Benefit number two is people can bring their own tools to come run analytics in those tables. So if someone has their own sort of Dremio instance running, they can use that to go run analytics on that table. Someone wants to go run use DuckDB locally on their laptop, they can go run analytics against that table. Multiple systems can now access the table. Okay, so that's all well and good. Now, of course, there are some limitations with that. Okay, this is where like catalogs come in, because at the end of the day, like the tables aren't aware of each other. Each table's metadata tells you about that table. So what happens when I want to join tables and whatnot? Okay, am I going to memorize where every single table is located? That's going to be quite challenging, because generally, when you're not working with a catalog, when you're talking about Delta and Hudi tables, you have to memorize what directory the table is in, because you're oftentimes pointing to a directory. And with Iceberg, you're pointing to a particular metadata file that tells you where the rest of the files are. So the solution to this is to have a catalog, okay? And a catalog can then tell you either which directory the table is in or where the right metadata file for that table to access the consistent, correct version of that table. And to maintain sort of consistency guarantees, oftentimes these catalogs will have a lightweight database kind of backing them. Okay, so that way they can store these sort of references, this sort of catalog, this listing in a safe place. And it's very lightweight because you're really just storing, hey, this table's in this directory, this table's this metadata file. So DuckDB is sort of challenging that. It's like, well, if you've already reintroduced the database, why not just use the database for everything? Okay, and I'm going to challenge that afterwards because I'm not sure if that is a good idea. Okay, for a few different reasons. But first, let's talk about the parts that sound like a good idea. Okay, so essentially, the idea behind Duck Lake is instead of having like metadata as files, and then you still have to have this separate catalog with a database, and then you have all these data files in your data lake, have the data as files on your data lake, and then everything else is still a database. Okay, so essentially, Duck Lake is essentially saying, okay, let's have a SQL database that stores your metadata, so that way you don't need to have a separate catalog abstraction because the database. A SQL database would already have a catalog built in. So in that case, you're combining the catalog and the metadata into sort of one, into a software. Okay, so it's no longer files, it's software. Of course, that gets stored, all that stuff gets persisted into some sort of system somewhere, but the idea is that it's now part of this integrated sort of database system. Okay, because at the end of the day, the idea is that you want the data files, or the assumption is that you want the data files to be in a system that all these other tools can read, and then they can just access this database through, I'm assuming, either like a JDBC or Aeroflot connection to then access the metadata. Now, initially, you'd think there's definitely some clear benefits here. Okay, in the sense that you can offload a lot of the scan planning into this SQL database. So in this case, unlike one of these other table formats where you look through the metadata, build a list of files you need to access, but then there's multiple metadata files you have to access. So there's all these requests to S3 that go on in that process. All of that could be kind of done within the database without having to necessarily access additional files, because all of it would be sort of in our more than likely block storage that the SQL database is accessing. Okay. And then it would give you a list of Parquet files to go access in your object storage that you can then go make HTTP requests to go get. Now, that one, well, and then again, that starts begging me if that's where I start to beg a few questions. Okay. So once what hap as you when you think about scaling this out, one of the benefits of kind of separating these things and having the metadata as files, especially in object storage, is that you can have a lot of concurrent processes doing that scan planning. So again, someone, completely separately running a query with Dremio versus running a query with Spark, that scan planning is being done by two different systems. They are not using the same resources, so they're not going to hit at a point where like one scale is going to essentially interrupt the other. Okay, and because the files are on object storage, something like an S3 that can scale. And because of the way object storage works, where like you have this sort of object abstraction on top of the actual storage of files, those files can be replicated and concurrent access to those files can be scaled up. Okay, so basically, the compute of planning the query, you're not sharing resources. And then two, in the compute of accessing the files, or I mean the actual requesting of files and storage of files, is done in a way that can scale. So everything can just generally scale. Okay. Now, the when you start now, yes, catalogs have a database, but the database is generally very lightweight. Like literally, like you're talking about a table that says sales table, this is the metadata file. Okay, so it's literally two columns in a sense. Now, of course, underlying different catalog implementations, you're gonna have some other granularity and some other stats that is gonna gather for observability and monitoring and things like that. But fundamentally, in order to actually just basically access a data lakehouse, you just need to know the name of the table and the location of the table. Then that's it. Okay, so the actual work that's happening on this backing database is a lot less. Okay, and then again, most of these catalogs oftentimes give you multiple options on what you can use for that backing database. So that way you could use something, let's say, like a MongoDB, where you can do more sort of horizontal scaling and sharding and things like that. So you can scale in different ways because you're not necessarily there's the way you're accessing these references doesn't require you to be locked into the paradigm of like a relational database where all this every reference has to be on the same instance. You can shard it. Okay, I can be like, okay, hey, I'm gonna shard all these references because people are just requesting a table and you're only ever really kind of grabbing that one row for the most part. Okay. So when you think about the access patterns, it becomes sort of scalable across different types of databases as your backing database, making it scalable. Okay, and again, you're not doing as much work there. So again, you probably can handle a lot more concurrent transactions hitting your catalog to request the location of these tables at a pretty high scale before you start really running into these issues. While with DuckLake, it seems like they're kind of making these the being more opinionated about how this should be done. Okay. And this is one of the nice things I love about Iceberg, that you do have sort of different people who have different opinions on how cataloging should be done, and you have a market for catalogs. Okay, so you have Polaris, you have Gravitino, you have Nessie, you have all these different versions of what a catalog can and should be, and people can choose the one sort of that appeals. And then honestly, oftentimes different people will try different ideas, and someone has a good idea, then the others will adopt it. It's the same thing with like the different table formats, because you have different people saying, hey, this is how it should be done, you're discovering all the good ideas faster. So I'm always hesitant when someone tries to integrate more, because while having everything kind of nice and integrated is easier in a sense, for sure, like it's easier to buy a car than to build a car. In the long run, it also limits sort of like discovery and innovation, because you don't have these sort of competitive pressures that kind of allow people to try different things and quite as robustly as you can when you send when you have different sort of projects, each kind of moving in different directions and discovering different things and trying different things. So in the sense that, will Duck Lake sort of be a easier way to get started with the data lakehouse pattern up front? Sure. I'm a little skeptical of what happens at scale. Again, I don't know all the details. Like, is it doing the scan planning, or is it just going to send over the metadata to a query engine for scan planning? These are details that will sort of affect its scalability. But at the end of the day, like, of course, as someone who wrote a book, wrote multiple books on Iceberg, I do certainly have sort of like my opinion. But hopefully, by explaining sort of my thought process around my opinion, hopefully, Alyssa at least gives you some angles to think through when you're evaluating your options. Again, the idea is like, are there going to be use cases where Duck Lake's going to be the right option? Yes. Are there going to be, but I still think in the vast majority of cases, and especially more so with the entire ecosystem that's been built around Iceberg, Iceberg is more often than not going to be the right choice, giving you sort of like the flexibility and optionality that you really want to have sort of a future-proof data platform. And there's been a lot of cool announcements. Oh, I mean, one, I'm publishing a book on Polaris now, with O'Reilly, and also publishing another book with Manning that's sort of yet to have its initial re early release. I'll put the link to where you can download the Polaris book in this podcast description. But yeah, that's a thing. And on top of it, like last week was Current, the Confluent conference, and they were talking a lot about their new feature Tableflow. And there's just been sort of like this rash of streaming to Iceberg features, because streaming to Iceberg has been a challenge for a long time. So having like companies like Confluent and Red Panda and Stream Rising, or I think I might have said the name wrong, Rising Wave, all kind of pitching their sort of different Iceberg streaming stories is good. Okay, so Tableflow Confluence idea here is basically the idea is that it really just allows you to kind of stream topics into a catalog that can be then accessed by your favorite Iceberg tool to then just kind of be able to read those tables and access those tables from based on Kafka streams, with Kafka kind of handling all the ingestion behind the scenes and abstracting all that away, which is really, really cool. Okay. And then I think with Tableflow, there's also integrations with being able to do transformations and all of that as well. So you can specify transformations that will happen. And then you have Red Panda also has a thing that allows you to ingest directly into a catalog. So that way you can specify like a topic and have it just stream into your catalog. So that way your tables show up in your existing Iceberg catalog and you can query them. So again, you have options as far as like streaming the Iceberg that kind of for companies who've invested the time to kind of figure out what's the best way to do this. Like, how often should you be, pulling from your Kafka topic and then, writing metadata? How often should you be running commits? All these kind of little details that are challenging when you're thinking about sort of like this paradigm of having to write data and metadata files for every individual commit. And how often do you really want to do that? Because if you're this just stream every individual record, well, then you're creating a new transaction for every individual record, which is ne not necessarily in efficient. So a lot of these kind of logistics are kind of worked out under the hood there, which is really, really cool. But overall, like when you think about it, just like the ecosystem that just exists for Iceberg now, like just the tool, the variety of tools you have, you're going to have the most flexibility to start from a small, like you can literally start really small with Iceberg, just, operating. You can self-deploy like a Nessie or Polaris catalog pretty easily, very cheaply, or even just get like a free catalog from different places like AWS Glue or Snowflake's Open Catalog, and then just attach your preferred storage and start working with Iceberg at a very small scale. Okay, and I mean the Python libraries and Python compatibilities are improving as well. So the idea is that you're already at a point where you can kind of do a lot of Iceberg-based workflows, even if you're at a company at a small scale. Like you can almost skip the whole step of data warehousing. So usually what would happen is that you start off with your databases and then you start using your databases for some basic analytics, and then you start realizing that, hey, a lot of these analytical queries are interrupting resources for my operational workloads. So maybe you create like a replica of that OLTP database, like a replica of a SQL server that you use for analytics. But again, it's still gonna hit certain scaling limits because it's not built for analytics. It's built for transactional workloads. So then eventually you start thinking, okay, hey, let me go move to a data warehouse like a Snowflake or a Synapse or a Redshift. And then you start realizing, okay, this gets really expensive and it's not as flexible as I'd like when I have different departments that need to access different data sets. Now they all have it in different data warehouses. So then you start exploring the data lakehouse. You can just skip a lot of that. You can just go, okay, hey, let's just start moving my data from like my SQL server over into the analytical data sets into a data lakehouse. Okay, and either use tools like Dremio or literally just operate off your laptop with tools like Polars and DuckDB and Pi Iceberg. So the options are there. Like there's really very from an al for analytical workloads, I see very little reason to not start with data lakehouse architecture sooner than later, because the barriers to doing so are much less than they used to be. The tools are there, and you will save a lot of money in the long run versus having to go into a data warehouse, kind of hit that sort of cost and scale barrier, and then have to make this other migration versus when you could have just started in data lakehouse to begin with. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. My name is Alex Merced. Again, check out datalakehousehub.com where I write blogs and run a Slack community. Also make sure to check out the Dremio blog at dremio.com/blog, because again, as an employee of or the head of DevRel at Dremio, I write a lot of content there, and I'm constantly talking about how Dremio can be a great data lakehouse solution for you as well. And now Dremio has a free trial of its enterprise features. So if you want to actually try Dremio's enterprise features, which include things like Iceberg clustering, auto-scaling, and several other really cool bits, also like an integrated Iceberg catalog, automated Iceberg ma table maintenance, AI semantic search, all sorts of really, really cool stuff that just really makes working basically gives you that sort of Snowflake-like experience, but with Iceberg as a first-class citizen. Check that out. Head over to dremio.com and try out the free trial. You can deploy into your Kubernetes environment. If you want to try out Dremio, but you don't have a Kubernetes environment, you can try out Dremio CE, the community edition, which is just sort of like the more sort of core features of Dremio. So you can connect to your data sources, and that you can use as much as you want for free. And that you can just try out the Docker container for. You can find all that stuff at dremio.com. But either way, that's it for this episode. I'll see you all later.